Good morning, everyone. I think we're ready to start the Safety and Service Delivery Committee. We have Mrs. Catherine Hudgens on the phone, so she'll be representing Virginia. So we do have enough to start this meeting. Let's start with a safety contact for Mr. Lavin. Mr. Lavin?
Building, restrooms are past the guard desk on the left. Today's safety contact is distracted driving. April was recognized by the National Safety Council as Distracted Driving Awareness Month. Distracted driving is a public health issue that affects us all. The latest statistics show motor vehicle fatalities are up 6% in 2015, with 40,000. Cell phones, cell phones, entertainment systems, involving voice command features, all of those items pose a threat to our safety. Just a second of your inattention is all it takes to change a life forever. I'm going to show a very brief video.
Thank you, Mr. Lavin. So our first item of business is approval of today's agenda, and I'd like to add an item onto the agenda. Mr. Leader is prepared to give us an update on the CNG bus issue. So I'd like to add that to the beginning of the agenda, if there are no objections. Seeing none, the agenda is approved. Next is the approval of minutes from our previous meeting. I'd like to ask for a motion from a committee member to approve the minutes of our March 8th session. Can I get a motion to approve this set of minutes?
So moved.
A second? All in favor? Aye. Thank you. The minutes are approved. Now that we've addressed the committee's administrative business, we can begin our meeting today. After we receive an update on the CNG buses, Mr. Leader is going to give us an update on Metro's Fair Share program, which is aimed at improving fare payment compliance on Metro Rail and Metro Bus. Next, Mr. Lavin will provide the final report on January's derailment of a red line train outside Farragut North Station and an update on improvements being made to track inspection and additional initiatives to improve employee and customer safety throughout the Metro Rail system. So first we'll go to Mr. Leader for an update on the CNG buses. Mr. Leader.
All right, thank you and good morning. Just would like to say after I get done with the presentation on Fair Share, I need to leave and go to the next room to give another presentation to the Capitol Committee. On March 28th, 164 new Flyer XN40 Excelsior CNG buses manufactured in 2015 and 2016, which are still under warranty, were removed from service after two buses stalled unexpectedly at low speed. This subfleet, bus numbers 2830 to 2993, originate or operate out of Blaytonsburg and 4 Mile bus garages, providing service in the District of Columbia as well as the state of Virginia. Despite best efforts from our engineering division and New Flyer, we have been unable to replicate the reported scenarios for those two buses. Four areas of opportunities to improve reliability have been identified through New Flyer. Increase engine idle speed. New Flyer believes that this will correct about 95% of the issue, and that would be taking our current idle of 700 and bring it up to 800 RPMs. Separate safety interlock circuits, modify master run switch logic, and separate network segments to reduce vulnerabilities in the bus line. Several buses have been equipped with real-time data logging equipment and will be run in real-world conditions without passengers. So as of this morning, 9 buses have been equipped with what is known as a Connect monitoring system. It's a New Flyer monitoring system. It allows them to get real-time information back at New Flyer. So anything that's going on with a bus, they'll know what's happening. 9 buses have been equipped. 2 of them are actually functioning in the sense it's working. New Flyer can see them. New Flyer is sending some additional engineers this afternoon to our location so that they can get the other 7 up and running. Our plan is to have New Flyer install another 25 buses with this Connect monitoring system. That would give us a total of 34 buses, which would be 20% of the 164 bus fleet for the CNG, and we would run them to see what we come up with. But right now, New Flyer believes that the majority of the issue resolves around the engine idle speed. While we understand that this has impacted some customers, safety of our customers and our employees is our highest priority, and we will continue to update as the status of the fleet changes. That's my report.
Thank you, Mr. Leader. Just a couple of questions. Are these buses used on other properties around the country, and are they experiencing any of these similar problems?
Correct. CNG is a fleet that's used not only here but on other properties. According to New Flyer, and we've reached out to the industry, there's been no other reports similar to this. So this is something new, and they're very interested in trying to find out what happened here.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? All right. With that, let's move on to the presentation on fair share.
Okay. Very good. Securing and eliminating unauthorized entry into our system is a top priority in Metro. As we have reported to the board previously, Metro loses millions of dollars each year when passengers use the system without paying. In addition, our federal formula grants are based on ridership, so every tap that is not counted has a negative impact on our ability to buy rail cars, buses, and make station improvements. The purpose of this presentation is to provide the board with an update on the Fair Share project, lessons learned from our pilot program, and the current expansion of the program throughout our system. Our Fair Share program has 3 primary elements. First, we are reinforcing that all customers must tap to ride. Second, we address employee assaults triggered by fare disputes, and what we're trying to do is eliminate that potential interaction between someone who's trying to beat the fare and one of our station managers. And third, secure all swing gates across our rail system. Over the last 10 months, we've been working to test and install securing devices for the swing gates to ensure everyone entering the system pays their fair share to ride Metro. As a reminder, in May 2017, we launched a pilot at Fort Totten and Gallery Place stations, testing 2 different swing gate configurations. Fort Totten was the only station where the swing gates were all secured. At Gallery Place, most of the swing gates were only affixed with a gate stop, allowing the doors to only swing in the direction of exit. Through lessons learned, we found evidence that the secure configuration is more effective at reducing but not eliminating fare evasion, and its expansion could protect the loss of critical funds we depend on to provide train and bus service. Swing gate usage at Fort Totten was reduced by more than 90% in a sample measurement. Overall ridership at Fort Totten saw a net gain of 2% compared to year-over-year trends before the pilot. The unsecured gate stop configuration was minimally effective. Next slide. As a result of the lessons learned from the pilot phase, we have revised the design configurations for the swing gate, and moving forward, we will ensure that 100% of the gates employ a magnetic lock configuration with an alarm. Gate status indicator lights will be added inside the kiosk to alert station managers to unsecured gates. This will address the issue of a gate being left unsecured unintentionally. We will also begin installing all new gates for improved reliability. And finally, we will raise the fare barriers to 4.5 feet above at all above ground stations. The swing gate project is broken into five phases. The work is front-loaded with 46% of the station secured by the end of fiscal year 2018 and 75% of the stations installed by the end of the fiscal year 2019. Securing the remaining swing gates requires relocating fare gates to meet ADA requirements, and this will be done concurrent with the installation of the new fare gates expected to begin in the next 2 years. Primary construction includes trenching for the installation of electrical conduit and cable, installation of railings and swing gates, and finally, replacement of floor tile. This is an aggressive schedule, however, we believe it is achievable. For the rail side, our next steps will include complete implementation of the fare share program at all rail stations, continue transit police enforcement efforts, pursue opportunities to make the system more robust and improve data collection with new technology and upcoming fare payment modernization program, and finally pilot new video monitors and automated people counters at Gallery Place Elevator Mezzanine. We have 12 other locations like Gallery Elevator Mezzanine where it's very easy to beat the fare unless we're watching the monitor. So we're looking to see how we can deter people from doing that. And finally, we just wanted to let the board know that we're just not looking at rail when it comes to fare evasion. We're also looking at what we can do on the bus side. However, I could say it's not apples for apples. The solution on the rail side is not something we could do on the bus side. First, we remind everybody what we're trying to do is first remind people as they come on the bus what the fare is. So we have a small... Okay. Next, we track it through our bus operators and through analyzing data. And what we're trying to do there is remove the confrontation between a bus operator and a non-fare paying customer. So there is an FA key that the bus operator can track. That data is used and is given to the police department so we can track areas or lines that have high fare evasion. And from that is that that's how the police department comes up with their tactical moves in the sense of how do they take their resources and deploy them strategically, both using undercovers as well as plain uniformed officers. And that is my presentation on the Fair Share Program.
Thank you, Mr. Leader. Could we go back to, a couple of slides to the slide before the Metro map that shows the gate? One more back. There we go.
Yes.
I'm looking at the secured configuration, magnetically secured with pushed open bar alarm and card swipe. What do you mean by card swipe? Is this a smart card swipe for so that a customer can go through, or is this for the station manager or what?
No, this would be for station managers or employees.
So could you just talk about, you know, how this would work? You have to have these gates here, I understand, and maybe you can explain why we have these gates and how, if somebody needed to get through or we had an emergency, how okay. That would work.
So typically gates like this are installed for emergency use in a sense if there's an EMS call and they want to bring a stretcher in, they can bring it through the unpaid area, if you wouldn't want to call it, or the swing gate. And also, it's kind of used for employees who are working in the station and are constantly bringing material in and out for their work site. It would be very difficult for them to be carrying equipment and, you know, trying to tap themselves through the AFC gate. So it's an important piece of equipment for the station proper. But in an event of a real emergency and it was a mass evacuation, our station managers have the ability to open up all the fare gates and allow everybody to do a mass exit. So by locking this gate, it would not prevent any kind of mass emergency if it did take place or evacuation out of the station.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee?
Yes, I believe the slide before this one, it says that picture is a little dark, but the secure configuration is effective at reducing but not eliminating fare evasion. Can you talk about why it only reduces it and doesn't eliminate it? Is this people who are jumping over the turnstile that doesn't change or piggybacking?
Yeah, that's correct. So it will eliminate the majority of the people that are going through right now the unlocked gate. However, what we're looking to do with the new fare gates as they come on board, I've been working with AFC to hopefully design a gate that will stop the piggybacking, or at least be able to count, you know, the fare evasion that's going on. So that's the type of fare evasion that right now, even by locking the gates, we can't eliminate, but I think it will pick up most of the fare evasion by just locking these gates. We'll reduce most of it.
Thank you. And you said that you're currently working with a group to make sure that ADA requirements are met for the locking of the gates? Could you?
Correct. So in phase two and three, we have proper ADA requirements in order to lock the gates. If you notice in phase five, that phase will take a little bit longer to initiate, and that's because we have to actually move the AFC equipment and properly lay it out so we get the proper dimensions that we need for the ADA. So that's going to be done with that AFC project.
Thank you.
Ms. Hudgens is on the phone. Do you have any questions, Ms. Hudgens? Did we lose you?
Hello?
No, we hear you now. Do you have any questions?
Okay. No, I don't. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. All right. Thank you, Mr. Leader. With that, let's go on to the next presentation. Mr. Lavin.
Previously stated, we'll start by providing the final brief on the Farragut North derailment, followed by automated track inspection process improvements, additional safety initiatives that improve our employees, customers, and first responder safety. The derailment key find is as far as the actual rail break. There were no issues with the composition of the rail tank from the metal polisher support. This incident was a result of corrosion pitting of the T-crack was the result of vertical bending, loading the rails of the train traversing the area, and was supplemented by temperature and possibly by mechanically induced tensile longitudinal stresses. The report states this type of failure would have been undetectable with conventional ultrasonic testing. The consultant is not aware of any industry accepted further, closer fit that the component initiated the peak failure of the bottom of the as far as the evacuation, Honor identified that the evacuation for a long period of time he made an organizational decision to immediately remove third rail power in the derailment scenario and execute a ground evacuation to reduce the impact on our customers. As far as communications, currently there are zero radio defects in the system, both internal and external. During the incident, the public radio system was designed comprehensive radio communication in addition, as part of the contract, consultant will evaluate the current frequency of the system testing, provide recommendations. Okay. All right, next we're going to talk about automated track inspection. As part of the modest risk reduction strategy to improve the quality of track assets and reduce the probability of both rail redundancy and performance one goal of the testing is to increase the modest use of new track inspection technology to collect better data for trend analysis purposes. Automated testing equipment can provide new insights in the condition of track assets through specific measurements or imaging of selected components. These activities complement walking visual scanning assesses the foot size based on 20-foot. Rail-based scanning assesses rail-based corrosion by taking very precise measurements of the rail base and calculating the changes of width in the rail base as compared to design standards. Both types of testing are currently in progress as of April 4, 2018, and is anticipated to be completed by the end of next week. Results of the testing type next is high resolution camera system. High definition back scanning utilizes high resolution cameras to identify defects while moving at normal speed. The images are then archived similar to inspection reports. A pilot using this technology was completed in March of 2018. Once the final report is issued, it will be used to update the track asset management database and put itself specifically to determine track position, as well as to have rail inventory, i.e. rail manufacturer roll date, following completion of the analysis work, an RFI will be developed and issued to explore purchasing equipment versus contracting services, as well as defining data management and comparing to industry best practices. In summary, of the three defects that were immediately identified, two were fixed before revenue started that morning. The other condition was picked up TV is used to take critical track geometry measurements at normal train speed. Measurements include gauge, force level, etc. Ultrasonic testing examines the running rails to identify internal rail defects that can lead to rail breaks. This is similar to taking an X-ray of an arm to determine if it is broken. This type of testing is previously done twice a year. Last year, it was noted that there was an increase in incidents where employees inadvertently made contact with an energized third rail or its components, predominantly in fixed work areas while using tools. As a lesson learned, additional ways to protect. Safety bulletin describing the process of frontline employees. Additionally, a supporting program was developed that identifies the roles, responsibilities of using the mat, the inspection process, the specification of the mat, and the life cycle management. The mats will be replaced on an annual basis and will be marked with a specific color stripe to identify the current blue stripe that can be utilized. Especially important as slip, trips, and falls is one of the leading injury types. The new hard hat that is being piloted provides for lateral impact protection, including impacts from front, top, side, and rear of helmet. The helmet falls free may be protected from some impact.
this pilot system by the training of public health adjustment. In fact, the World Trade was on the helmet. Pilot participants include those involved in engineering, construction, and track maintenance activities. Next, we have two videos that demonstrate the existing hard hat on the left versus the pilot hard helmet on the right. The demonstration is intended to create note that even with the straps not connected, next to topic server initiative that benefit customer platform safety. There are stations that have uneven boarding surfaces. WMATA is piloting optimal train boarding area signage to inform passengers where to best position themselves to board trains at these locations, which are Braddock Road and Rhode Island Avenue. Curvature and lighting differences can make it difficult for the operator to see down the entire length of the train. To assist the operator, CCTVs were installed that projects video feeds of the rear of the train to the train operator. One example of a pilot program is the installation of automated announcements in the escalators at Gallery Place Chinatown Station. Since automated announcements were installed at the Gallery Place entrance, escalated over a year ago, additional improvements such as LED lighting along the rises and higher visibility stairs are planned. For employee safety, roadway worker protection will be discussed. The roadway protection access pad is being updated to reflect changes in road use. First group of folks on process safety compliance, specific emphasis on RWC safety rule compliance. The duties of this group will include field checks of work zones and PPE. The second group will focus on industrial hygiene activities, family role, help identify hazards, and help industrial hygiene activities. Easily identifiable color-coded signage has been placed at 8 diverging points throughout the system. All actionable items assigned to the NTSB recommendation were completed and submitted to the NTSB for closure. I'll take any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lavin. You know, it's I'm pretty impressed about how you're addressing systematically all the different issues that we've been talking about the last 2 years. You have lots of programs in place that basically, you know, have the ability to hopefully to get us to the next level of safety here at Washington Metro. I'm especially impressed with the use of technology. Visual inspections will always be very important. But technology, automated types of inspections, they do have a benefit in that they tend to be very consistent, and they give you the data that you may need for trending and looking at long-term data to see where problems are developing. So I think that's very important. I did have a couple of questions on the accident report. First of all, the final report needs to be approved by the FTA. Have they done that yet?
No, they have not. They only received it.
Okay, so they'll be reviewing it and then approving the final report. I'd like to talk about the source of the corrosion. We've talked over the last year or so about different sources of corrosion on Washington Metro. One is water ingress in the tunnels. That we have a program in place to basically try to prevent some of the water in the tunnels. And the other thing we've talked about is this electrolytic corrosion that occurs when you have current leakage. In this one derailment, is there any concern about electrolytic corrosion, or is this all due to water ingress in the tunnel?
Right.
Based on my experience, I'd say that all of those are concerns. Well, it should be noted that next month we're going to be around testing. In addition to that, I believe in a different committee, we'll be talking about the earth grouting program on the red line.
Another question I had, you talked about rail-based corrosion. The ability to look at rail-based corrosion with an automated system. We talked about the corrosion on where this derailment occurred as not being detectable. Will this rail-based corrosion system, will this give us hints on where to look for additional damage?
It'll give you better opportunities to identify those types of defects. In addition to that, when you overlay that technology, and then look at areas where they get intense corrosion, and look at
So we are taking steps to try to prevent these types of failures in the future, right?
Sorry.
Okay. Last question I had, I looked at some of the employee, the different equipment provided to the employee. What are we doing to make sure that the employees are using all the tools that they have? I mean, whether it's the third rail mats, whether it's the new hard hat equipment, are we doing oversight to make sure that those policies to use that equipment is followed?
So as I mentioned, we're standing up a process that you get to actually collect the national manager. In addition to that, my staff will go out to the field to take the mission. As a matter of fact, we're going to do one probably this weekend.
Thank you very much. Ms. Harlan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of follow-up questions regarding the reports on the accident. Is it accurate to state that no technology that we're currently running right now could have detected that level of corrosion on the underlying of the rail? That's correct, right? So would it be excessively redundant to run the TGV and these types of scans over and over again to address finding something like this? I mean, how do you believe that running more testing would eliminate this type of problem? Or are you just looking for any other type of defects that would naturally occur that are not like this yet?
So if I'm understanding you, it's really about a risk.
Okay.
This what I mean by that is we do hold contact. You may pick up internal rail for 30. They have the ability to pick it up much earlier at 10%. So a 10% defect doesn't necessarily pose a threat
but you want to know about it earlier, and then if we could use that information for trend analysis purposes, if we have an area.
So it just gives us more information to make decisions.
Okay. And the CCTV cameras that you said that are going to be installed at several stations for conductors of the train to view customers that are getting on, is this a problem for more than a few stations? Is this something that you foresee in the future being utilized at all stations? I know currently most conductors just stick their head out the window to make sure everyone is boarding. Why in this particular situation are the CCTV cameras needed?
Overall, I don't know at this point if that means system-wide cameras or not. We need to do the analysis. And there are other ways to improve it, such as, you know, we have programs where improving lighting at stations.
And the tunnel signage that was placed, is that for the drivers, the customers, the employees? What are those tunnel signs specifically for?
Orientated, but that's just to give them a greater opportunity to make sure they're in the right location.
And that has been placed at all tunnels that are divergent from
yes,
each other?
There's eight locations in the system.
That's all the questions.
Ms. Marushin, do you have any questions?
Yeah.
Okay. Ms. Hutchins, do you have any questions for Mr. Lavin?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Lavin. As I looked at the many different things that we talked about in terms of safety improvements, as we're building a new system, are there any of these that we want to include, or is this outside of the design and structures of the original system and the expansions?
I mean, that's something we'd have to evaluate, but I think we're in a position now.
But none are part of the basic foundational structure. I'm sorry, you are not coming through as clearly as the others, and I think it may be your mic or something. Yeah.
I tend to believe it's me, but I'll try. As Ms. Manley stated, if we come to an organizational decision that for whatever reason data drives that we need cameras at train operators' positions, then that would become part of the future design concept. But at this point,
okay.
It would be premature to commit.
Okay, and that's the one. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hodges. Do we have any more questions for Mr. Lavin? Seeing none, this committee stands adjourned.